morning. We'll call the meeting to order this morning of the Agriculture Policy Committee. Have a full agenda, and let's go join with it this morning. Don't have quite enough yet for a quorum, but we'll start the meeting anyway. First up is House File 124. Good morning, Representative Swedzinski. And Representative Miller, would you like to move House File 124?
I would, Mr. Chair. I ask that House File 124 be re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you. And good morning, Representative Swedzinski. And you have an amendment for your bill?
Mr. Chair, can we move it if we need it? Can we move it now or just wait till we... Or?
Okay.
We
have a quorum.
All right.
Now you want me to do it, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I apologize. Mr. Chair, at this time I would like to, for House File 124 to be re-referred to the General Register.
Very good, thank you. And now let's talk about the amendment, Representative.
Sure, Mr. Chair. The A4 amendment, which is would get the bill a little bit closer in line to where we'd like to go, and this is a basis of some conversations that we've had between the last committee hearing and this. And this just talks a little bit about some differences. Line 1.14, Section B, a landowner or occupant of land that is adjacent to trunk highway right-of-way may mow or hay adjacent right-of-way or may designate another person who may mow hay. Mowing or hay doesn't, paragraph does not require notice to the commissioner. And then 1.19, it deletes a cert portion and then just adds it deletes a portion of the current language and just adds the Department of Agriculture and DNR should be consulted when it comes to maintaining the vegetation in the right-of-way that's conducive not only to animal agriculture, that's an addition, but wildlife, which is under current law, that means most importantly maintains public safety. So I'd appreciate just getting the bill in the shape that I'd like it, and then there we go.
Questions, members, on the A4 amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment is approved. Representative, to your bill, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Anderson. Members, appreciate the opportunity to come before you for House File 124. This is a culmination of really kind of a change in shift and focus across the state. This is probably one of the biggest issues that I've heard as a legislator in the past. I believe the Townships Association just met this morning, and that was a large chunk of their conversation between their association at breakfast. Folks are hearing about this. People are very concerned about this change, about the permit, about the different regulation of the ditches that have been in standard practice for the last, you know, multiple decades. And this bill, I think, really gets after a lot of the issues that we've been hearing about, quite frankly, I think it's a needed piece of legislation that really gets after kind of the historical use and the historical relationship. 60, 80, 90 years ago, a lot of the roadways were gravel and tar and the movement to, and at that point in time, you know, I think there was a wink and a nod saying, you know, as long as you don't fight it, we'll kind of let a lot of these lands be maintained by those local landowners. And we just simply want to state that in law and keep that going. That's a decent relationship as a landowner myself that owns and operates land adjacent to the state highway system. We really do a lot of cleanup and, quite frankly, do some maintenance as well when there's maybe a car accident or filling in ruts within the ditches. We've done that on our own dime many times. And, we feel that the current situation, there's a wild, wild west going on when it comes to ditch mowing. This is not some great money-making adventure that we partake in for our own benefit. Oftentimes, it's for safety, to maintain the roadway, to have a wide berth so that vehicles have many opportunities to see deer in those active areas so that they don't wind up getting into a potentially fatal accident. And also just cleaning up and picking garbage, and this eases in all those processes. I can't tell you how many times my mom and my nephews and nieces go out in the ditches after we mow the ditch in the middle of summer just to kind of keep up on the garbage maintenance because of what goes by, and that really helps with the process of keeping our roadways clean. This bill's primary objective is to limit the agency's ability to request a permit on behalf of landowners, and also gets rid of the regulations that kind of came up last November as far as those things with it, and kind of keeps the status quo, which I think is working just fine.
Questions from members? If not, we have a list of testifying. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. In our packet, we have a letter from the Minnesota Honey Producers Association. And it appears to me that they would prefer to keep those ditches as a source for nutrition and pollen for the bees. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not even going to try to. I'm sorry. I have one of those names, too, and I'll work harder at being able to say your last name. No, I think we have a lot of different interests when it comes to the ditches across the state. Animal agriculture is one, bees being one. You know, those things all need to be weighed. There are potential areas where that could take maybe some precedent. I think we have current law that maybe has preference into those areas that kind of talks a little bit about that. What we're trying to do is just say that there are more than one interest that's historically had interest in ditches and in those joining areas. I think the landscape is changing. When that potentially was put into place years ago, that was the only area in the state. But now with Legacy, we do have a lot of dollars moving into building habitat and buying land in our rural areas. The competition for those properties, those aspects are moving forward. And, this is a definite feedstock, and I think those things can be represented. And I think the amendment, line 1.19, it talks about wildlife and 111. I really think we need to find a spot that can do both, and I think without eliminating either one, I don't want to discount their feelings. I think bees are a big part of our ecosystem. They need to be maintained, but it all is, yeah, it's good perspective as well.
Representative, we do have somebody coming up later on to go over this letter and read it. So if you have further questions, you want to save it for that time?
Sure. I do have another question.
Okay, go ahead, Representative.
So is it possible that under this change, this bill, that the sides would not get mowed? Could people just leave it natural? I'm not sure that I'm asking the right questions in the right kind of way. So it says they can get a permit, but if they get a permit, could they just leave it in its natural habitat?
Representative Swazinski?
And I think in those areas, where the state of Minnesota potentially owns some of those properties that are adjacent, that might be a possibility. I think under current practice, I think what we're trying to do is simply move the ball forward, and I'm not sure about how many miles. I think we're dealing with over 250,000 acres of property across the state. There are some ditches that are not being mowed, and there's some that are. And, what we're concerned about is really that I've heard from my constituents and from constituents around the state that, starting to get the beginning of enforcing an arbitrary date when it comes to hay and mowing really doesn't make sense when it comes to actual reality, when it comes to the feed value. And I think that's one of the main things we're getting after with this bill.
Okay, thank you.
Follow-up, Representative? Okay, very good. Any other questions? If not, we have a list of testifiers, and the audience would like to come down. First up, we have Cole Ruprecht, Minnesota Farm Bureau, and also Tom Peterson from the Minnesota Farmers Union. Good morning. Identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair and Committee, my name is Cole Ruprecht. I'm the Associate Director of Public Policy with Minnesota Farm Bureau. I want to thank Representative Swazinski for his work on House File 124 and all those who have helped him with that. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports House File 124 as amended. Safety is our greatest concern when it comes to agriculture, whether it's in the field, on the farm, on the roads and highways, and certainly into the state highway right-of-ways. Farmers do not go out in their alfalfa and hay fields during or after a rain event. to cut or mow hay, as it would rut up their fields and also increase mold within their hay. That also relates to when they're out haying or mowing in the state highway right-of-ways. They're not out there during the rain, causing ruts and creating feed that is less palatable for their livestock. In addition, control of noxious weeds is critical. We are all aware of Palmer amaranth, and allowing farmers and landowners to mow in the state highway right-of-ways will create fewer instances where weeds will mature to seed and help control noxious weeds throughout the state. MnDOT has expressed concerns wanting availability to contact adjacent landowners when pesticides have been sprayed in the ditches, and we believe that that can be handled without requiring a permit. Landowners adjacent to the state highway right-of-ways have until February 28th currently to apply for a permit, and after that date, it is open to anyone to apply for that permit on March 1st. Many members that I have visited with across the state said that they have found out about the permitting process through their organizations they are involved in or through Farm Broadcast Radio and not through the news release MnDOT released last fall. Our concern is many people who have mowed the same stretch of ditches for generations will lose that opportunity if they do not apply for it by February 28th. Many beginning farmers across the state, this is their sole supply of forage for their livestock throughout the winter months. By mowing and haying in the state highway right-of-ways, farmers and landowners are helping control the spread of noxious weeds and also saving the state taxpayers' dollars by not requiring MnDOT employees to have to be out there mowing and maintaining the forage growth. In closing, I want to again express Minnesota Farm Bureau's support for House File 124 as amended and thank Representative Swinzinski and the committee for addressing this issue impacting many across the state.
Thank you, sir. Next up.
Hello, Madam Chairman. I am Pat Verley. I was born and raised along U.S. Highway 59 just south of Marshall. On a farm, have maintained those road ditches basically all my life. I also harvest some hay on U.S. Highway 23 in the Marshall area. As far as safety, we've always been very aware of the safety factor. Having lived on 59 all my life, I am well aware of, the truck traffic on that road and the hazards. Have never had a problem with that. Have been very aware of that, very, very safe in what I've done out there. We maintain those road ditches. There have been multiple times where vehicles have went in the ditch. The ground has been damaged from a wet spring or something. Where we have maintained it, we have went and improved it. I would say, and honestly, more so than the DOT. As far as the spraying of it, yes, we do not like noxious weeds, but we spray it discriminately. We do not just go over it. My question is, it's a system that's been working very, very well for years. I think we are good stewards, and also we grow. We're planting 30 acres of pollinators at our farm. We have alfalfa. I think we're doing a very good job. My question is, why is it changing? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And I agree with a lot with what was just said. I would just add a few things, too, that our membership, and we do support Representative Swinzinski's bill and amendments. Our members are very frustrated with this process. We just had our county presidents in this weekend, and when I gave my legislative report, I think I had 14 questions, and literally 13 of them were on this issue. And so you can see the interest and what I would call chaos and confusion that the permit has created in the countryside. And so that it is kind of frustrating. I continue to get calls every day. I got another call from a farmer in Representative Miller's district yesterday who mows along Highway 7, has been doing it for 40 years. What I ask them when farmers call me, I say, as Mr. Verley said, have you ever had a problem, mowing, baling, safety? Have you left ruts? Have you ever had any issues? Never had an issue. Then I ask them, have you ever had to get a permit? And I used to say 9 times out of 10, but we're way past that, where farmers tell me they've never had to get a permit to bale on a state highway before. And I think that's, you know, important as we go through in this process. And so, you know, we were frustrated with the process that MnDOT came up with this and realized that this has been the law. We recognize that, and we've tried to discuss this with our members. This has been in law. The permit's been required, but the law has just not been followed. And custom and usage, as many of you know, in the rural areas has been to mow and bale the ditches for the forage. As Mr. Ruprecht said, a lot of beginning farmers, especially in the western, southwest part of the state, this is their forage. And so the impacts that this bill could have are very concerning to a lot of our producers. A couple other things on the process, I'd say. When we were working with this last year on the bill, we also, agreed to work on educating our membership, because there's a couple of different issues that come up. One is pheasants. The newer one is pollinators. The last couple of years we've been working and recognizing that we want to address pollinator situations. As we left it last year, the DNR was hiring a roadside for habitat coordinator, who I believe was hired late summer, early fall this year. We used to have a group that met years ago and that looked at roadsides for habitat and those kind of issues. And so that's what we were hopeful. We would follow that process and work with that person and also continue to educate our members on pollinator issues and what they could do to continue to move forward with pollinators. So I do appreciate that MnDOT has made an attempt to improve the permit. Our members would still rather not have a permit at this time. They did make changes to the permit, moving the date back a month, but I'd say it was good, but it also created more confusion. They dropped the deposit, as I understand it, but the deposit's still there, but there's no dollar amount, and it's kind of at a discretion. And one of the farmers called me this week, too, said that if I bail, you know, for five different landowners, do I have to have five different deposits? And, you know, I'm not really clear on that either, because it's five different parcels. They also, MnDOT, we also appreciate that they dropped some insurance requirements and some of the things that equipment and things you had to wear. So I appreciate Representative Swazinski bringing this bill, and thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Peterson. Next up, we have Scott Peterson from the Department of Transportation. And again, to our testifiers and members, we have a full agenda today and lots to get over. So good morning, Mr. Peterson.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. I have some, or at least one handout for members.
Okay, our page should be around to get that passed out. Okay. Hey, go ahead, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Scott Peterson from the Department of Transportation. And first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Swazinski for the amendment. I think it does improve the bill from our perspective, but I have to say we still have some concerns. We are very concerned about the impact it has on our ability to permit for activities on MnDOT right-of-way. A couple of clarification points I'd like to make before I get into why it's important for the department to have this permitting authority. One, I'd like to reinforce what's already been stated, but that this is not a new policy. The requirement to get a permit to do hanging and mowing on MnDOT right-of-way has existed forever. I think it is true that because of lack of awareness or just a widespread disregard for what's in law about the need to get a permit to do it, our folks have over time kind of not been as emphatic about requiring people to get a permit as might have been helpful given where we are today. But also, I said there's no cost to get a permit. The purpose of the permit basically is that to ensure that the hang does not jeopardize the public investment or the traveling public or the permittee, him or herself. The bill, basically, as it's written now, eliminates property rights acquired by the state for the purposes of providing a highway system. This legislation grants to adjacent landowners basically property rights that were purchased by the state when it established the trunk highway system. And it does not really address what is really the crux of the problem, which is the August limits for hang. I would just like to clarify, you know, that some of the rights that the state's purchased. I have a couple of sample easements here that I got from our land management office that state, for example, this one says, grantor for itself, its successors, and assigns this covenant never to cut, damage, destroy, or remove any tree or shrub or other natural growth upon the herein before described premises. And it includes grasses, shrubs, trees, and natural growth now existing on said lands.
Excuse me, sir. We have a question from Representative Miller. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, three questions, but they should be short, I promise. First question is what are the regional MnDOT offices saying about this new practice?
Mr. Peterson.
What are they feeding back to you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, from my conversations with our permit folks in the districts, number one, they have gotten lots of calls and about the changed permit requirements. There's been a lot of angry phone calls and angry visits by people. I think in large part people recognize the need to have a permit, but they're frustrated because we don't really have the ability to enforce the requirement as it stands right now because of the limits in the law and the limits in this manpower and ability to go out there and police our roadsides to prevent mowing.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, what changes in practice will these district offices need to prepare for, and what will the costs be involved in relationship to that?
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, you know, during the last couple years, we've been working on changes to this section of statute with legislators, and we, as a result, we became aware that there were basically there's very little permitting actually occurring statewide, and so we decided that since the law requires the department to manage its roadside for several purposes, that we should make an effort to comply with the law and devise a method that hopefully would increase voluntary compliance. So we revised the process to make it easier for people who want to hay the ditches to obtain a permit. And so since that time, we've actually made it even easier because of some of the feedback we've gotten. So other than respond to requests for permits and completing permit requests, I don't know that any other changes will be made in the way we deal with these permits.
And last question, Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, so you sort of kind of answered this, but it feeds into the cost of doing this. Because if there's only permitting that was always there and there's going to be no new work by MnDOT, then it raises the question of who's going to enforce this and who's going to incur. Because at some point there's going to be cost involved by someone because there's new work to be done. I hope that you can at least agree to that there's going to be new work that has to be done. And I certainly hope that you're not asking the landowners to increase their work when they're already trying to do the work to take care of these ditches. So my question to you is, you said there's no one there to enforce it. Who do you intend to ask to enforce this? Like, what's the process going forward? So knowing, because if you have this new mandate, if you say you have to do it this certain way, the only way you can get people to do things is to enforce it. So who do you intend is going to enforce it, and what are those costs going to be?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, as I think I mentioned before, right now the law doesn't give us the authority to do enforcement action. There's no penalties in the law. So our maintenance folks, in the course of their normal job responsibilities, if they see someone mowing and they know that there's no permit for mowing in that area, they will stop and talk to them. They don't have the ability to confiscate their hay or anything like that in order to provide enforcement. So, you know, in that respect, you know, that's a limitation in the current law. Our effort in providing this revised permit process, which again is not a new requirement but hopefully a modified and easier process to follow, you know, the intent was to try to increase compliance, voluntary compliance.
One real quick question.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Peterson, do you intend in the future to pursue legislation that would require enforcement by either by the MnDOT or some other government entity? Is that the next step?
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, no, we don't have any plans to do that this time.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, I've got a question on how you plan to deal with the folks that don't harvest the hay on those right-of-ways, whether they be a right-of-way or they be a fee title ownership of a state highway. In my area, Highway 169, Highway 65, State Highway 18, I can just rattle them all off. It's customary that many, many, many homeowners mow right to the shoulder, and they manicure that area along their property and their driveway. Are all those people going to have to get a permit now because they don't harvest? But when the grass gets about this high, they're out there and they treat it just like their lawn. And that's been customary since we got riding lawnmowers predominantly. But how are you going to deal with that? And as I understand it, we really opened up a box of worms here. I mean, are those people necessary? I mean, I read the law. Those people have to have a permit because they are absolutely cutting, and they're cutting that grass way less than 12 inches. And there's literally thousands of them where I live that do that all summer long.
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you're right. Those people would have to get a permit under the current law. We would, and that is one of the reasons why we're trying to make people aware of the permitting requirement. I will add that, again, over the last couple of years, as we've tried to revise this law so that it works better for everyone, we made exceptions in the draft language to accommodate people who mow the ditch for lawn so that they would have the opportunity to maintain it as part of their lawn.
Follow-up, Representative.
Just as a quick follow-up, like I said, I you know, whether it's a box of worms or a box of rocks, the recent activity on MnDOT's part, better be really careful what you ask for, because that's a whole other group of citizens that don't even realize that that you've decided how they're going to manicure what they consider their front lawn, and that just the way it's been where I live for a long time.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mowing a ditch or not mowing a ditch, I'm not going to get into that particular argument. My question is, do people get hurt when they're mowing the ditch? Do they get hit by a car every once in a great while? Does their tractor roll over? Are there accidents when this is done by the farmer or anybody else?
Who wants to answer that? Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, to my knowledge, we have not had any private entity who's been mowing the ditch get hit by a car. I don't know that we would know if they got hurt, again, because we have very little knowledge of who's actually doing the work in our ditches at this point in time. We do know that MnDOT had one of our own employees hit and killed while mowing a ditch.
Representative Mahoney.
So, I mean, frankly, I'm not in the midst of mowing a ditch or not mowing a ditch. My only concern, if there's a bill that's coming forth and a farmer's going to do this, I want something in there that exempts the state from being drawn into a lawsuit, because that's right for a good attorney to come along and try and get $100,000 or medical costs out of the state. So how you do it, I don't care, but I don't want my taxpayers having to pay for some farmer's injury when they were doing whatever they've always been doing.
Comment, Representative Swazinski?
No. That's language that I'd be happy to look at, Representative.
No, I'm going to ask you to do it. I don't want to.
Oh, yeah, no, no. I would be happy to work with the department. We've got an open door policy. I'd be happy to work with them as part of this process to create that language and as a possible amendment.
Again, we have a lot of testifiers coming up. A question from Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to make it as tight a question as possible, but I was struck by the issue of rights. Having been around real estate for a long time, there is the exchange or the movement of rights whenever highway projects go through, and I've been too deep in that a bunch of times. we're kind of unraveling that, or actually what we're doing is turning a blind eye to that, the action that took place when those rights were transferred. I'm wondering, did anybody think about permanent easements for purposes of, and that's sort of an agreement between the property owner that exists and may have an interest in having sort of a permanent easement to harvest hay, to do whatever. I think that that can be a relatively tight document that can be an agreement between the state. It could be used to transfer any risks, liabilities, and the agreement between those so that anybody venturing out there is assuming those risks and responsibilities and is only operating under a lease arrangement where they would actually have the enumerated right to do that. Otherwise, my background tells me that they don't have a right to even drive the tractor down the ditch. So,
Mr. Peterson, care to comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, frankly, I don't know that we've anticipated the possibility of an easement for paying rights, as I was trying to point out when we got into these questions. You know, our easements acquired the right to control vegetation along roadsides because it's important to the continued good functioning of the roads and keeping them in a state of good repair, controlling snow, providing infiltration into the ditch, making sure the drainage is adequate, making sure that the slope is well stabilized. All those things are important to ensure the continued structural integrity of the roadbed that's underneath the pavement. And, you know, though, all that having been said, if there's a way that an easement to allow haying could be drafted, I'm sure that we'd be willing to consider that possibility.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Next up, we have Don Arnosky from the Isaac Walton League. Were you through your testimony?
Mr. Chairman,
I have tight time constraints.
I had some more that I wanted to say, and I will
try to summarize it
just to say that the state has an ongoing responsibility to manage the state highway system in a safe manner, and it's hard to for us to perform that duty in a responsible manner without knowing who's in the right-of-way and what their ability to operate safely in the right-of-way is. We also have a fiduciary responsibility to preserve the value of the asset, to provide a transportation network to people who want to use highways to get from place to place. This includes protecting the state from lawsuits arising from either the mistakes or the negligence of people who are doing operations in our right-of-way, as pointed out by Representative Mahoney. And so we think that those are legitimate concerns for any landowner, and we are charged, as Representative Swodzinski said, with management of 250,000 acres of right-of-way. It's a big task, but the state has a lot of money invested in that, and you know that's kind of our primary concern, is that we continue to make the highway system safe and usable for people at the lowest possible cost. So with that, I'll just conclude.
Thank you, sir. I was struck by your comment that you're not aware of any or many accidents involving ditch mowing on state highway right-of-ways. It just makes me wonder if, do we really have a problem with the way the current system has been operating for many, many years, and are we trying to come up with a solution to a problem that really isn't there? And that's just my comment. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, again, we have MnDOT employees who have observed people operating in an unsafe manner from our experience with highway crashes for decades and injuries to our own employees and fatal fatalities to our own employees and in our construction projects. We know that there's a high level of risk when you're operating alongside a roadside. Many of our roadways or traffic travels at 70 miles an hour or greater. They're not always, you know, aware of activities that are happening in the roadsides. We know that there's a lot of distraction that keeps drivers from focusing on their driving as they go along, and we certainly don't want any crashes to occur. That's why we take, with our own employees, we take several steps to ensure that they're operating safely when they're out working on the highway, including flashing amber lights and high visibility vests. We sometimes send other trucks along that have crash attenuators behind them to protect employees while they're out there working, and yet still we have people that are injured and killed on an all-too-frequent basis. Just a couple days ago, we had an employee of a construction company working on a project along Highway 169 that was killed. And again, we have a Workers' Memorial Day every April where we honor the people who have lost their lives while working on the roadsides. And so, even though I don't have firsthand knowledge of any accidents or injuries that have occurred to people who non-MnDOT employees who are working in our roadsides, we do know that there's a high level of risk out there, and we want to do everything we can to make sure that those crashes don't occur.
Thanks, Mr. Peters. And next up, again, we have Don Arnosky. And on deck is Aaron Roop and Margo Munson. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Don Arnosky. I represent the Isaac Walton League. The Isaac Walton League is a conservation organization, grassroots, with local chapters throughout the state and across a number of other states. We are not experts on transportation, but we are interested in the public right-of-way as an opportunity to balance multiple interests, which include the opportunity to provide habitat for pollinators. I think you'll probably be hearing a little more from the beekeepers and from other folks about that, but there are competing multiple public interests here, and you'll be learning more or hearing more about the decline of pollinators and the loss of habitat across much of our state, often because of changed practices in terms of agriculture and the way people are managing their farms versus years ago. We support the seeking of the opportunity to encourage pollinator habitat in places where that can be balanced with other habitats. We, many of our members are farmers. We're very, I think pollinators are recognized as, call them unpaid farm workers, important to certain types of farm crops and farm operations. And so I don't think this is about pitting different interests. It is about balancing a variety of public interests. We have become aware of the manner in which the new permit requirements were released last year and understand and respect that a lot of people are confused, angry, and upset about that. And it's come to our attention that there's a DE3 amendment sitting available, potentially, for somebody to offer to this bill. It seems to me that might be some good sense. Because as I read it, and I've not spoken to the author, I'm not sure who the author is, but as I read it, it's kind of a timeout for a year. Let's keep things the way they were, and let's take a more careful look at all these competing interests, some of which have historic precedent going back generations, some of which are new and urgent public needs, such as the need to protect habitat for our bees, butterflies, and other pollinators to provide the services that they do across the landscape. So I would encourage you, we do not support the amended House File 124. We do appreciate the fact that Representative Swedzinski is open to and has been changing and refocusing his bill through time as he's gotten information, and that's very helpful. But perhaps the DE3 amendment will take us in the direction that will allow everybody to take a more thoughtful look. It wouldn't change anything for this year, presumably, and take a more thoughtful look at these issues that have been percolating for several years. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, sir. A question from Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr., I apologize. I forget your last
name. Arnosky.
Arnosky. Okay, thank you. So just quick comment and then a question at the end of it. So the state is purchasing or putting into permanent easement millions of acres of land every year, primarily through the legacy. There's some other places that they're doing that. And I question whether the state is putting this much effort into pollinator habitat in some of this land with the way that they're talking about with this. So that isn't so much my question, but I hope that you're having those conversations with them. But my question to you in relationship to that is, as we were talking about high-speed traffic going by and the safety to human beings, it almost sounds flippant when I ask this question, but I have to ask it. Is there not a concern that the pollinators are at risk with that high-speed traffic being so close to where it is that they're growing? Meaning, is there not a concern that if we expand pollinator right along the highways, like I said, I'm trying not to be funny about this. I'm trying to be very serious with this. Is there not a concern that there's going to be a lot of casualties putting them there?
Mr. Arnosky, how about a short answer?
I think we're talking about habitat that's possible as opposed to ideal. It's already publicly owned, and so it's just an opportunity to try to improve the habitat where the public already owns it.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I guess I would just say that I seriously hope that all the millions and millions of acres that the state is purchasing or putting into permanent easement, that they're dealing with these things there. Because they have plenty of land, in my opinion. These highways are not only a balance of benefits, but also a risk to the actual habitat for these people. We haven't talked about pheasants or deers running out and stuff like that either. So I just question why along state highways. Thank you.
My last count, when I heard the DNR in the state controls upwards of 8 million acres. If no more questions, we have Aaron Roop.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name's Aaron Roop. I have some testimony of my own, but first I'm going to read the letter from Dan Whitney, who's
we,
the...
We do have the letter here.
Okay. Has everybody had a chance to read that? Okay. Maybe I'll jump to my own testimony.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
First, I'll address Representative Miller your question. The Xerxes Society submitted some testimony when this bill was heard last in the Transportation Committee, and I'll make sure that I think it got to you all late. So I'll send it to you. But there are a couple of studies referenced that there aren't actually that many pollinator fatalities, as many as you would think, with this habitat. Yeah, and for those of us who drive in rural areas and think about what it was like to drive in rural areas, 20 years ago, and the amount of work that I had to do when I was little scrubbing insect bodies off of windshields, that's not really work that I have to do anymore. So it's a hard life for insects and ecosystems. It's a hard life for pollinators, and pollinators are incredibly important, and not just for the food that we eat, but for our ecosystems. And we hear this 1 in 3 bites of our food to be attributed to bees, and it's true. Our Minnesota honey producers and other commercial beekeepers, they put their hives on semis, and they drive them around the country to pollinate our fruits, our nuts, and vegetables. They're the cornerstones of our nutrition. Dan Whitney couldn't be here in person to read his testimony for you all today because his job right now is to be in Texas raising bees for his agricultural operation. Most other commercial beekeepers, we have about 350-400 members in the Minnesota Honey Producers Association, and most of them are out in California right now pollinating 80% of the world's almonds. That's the livelihood. That's how they make money as beekeepers these days. Honey's kind of an added hopeful bonus income. That value of this work by honeybees to our national food production is $17 billion. We're the 6th largest honey-producing state. We have a lot of commercial beekeepers here, and I'm not sure what portion of that number is directly attributed to our commercial beekeepers, but it's a significant percentage. Their work is also significant to the Minnesota economy. So the Department of Ag, 80% of our state crops, 85% benefit from insect pollination. Pollination is essential for apples, which are a top fruit crop. That's $17.7 million in 2015. And their pollination services and honey production contribute only over $30 million to the state economy every year. So all that's like, where does this fit with the roadside stuff, right? Minnesota, we've historically been in the top 5 honey-producing states in the country because we've had these great spaces to be beekeepers, to be bees. We have beekeepers who are based here because we've had strong ecosystems that support honey production and support hives being strong enough to then do this pollination work that our food system requires. And when we think back 60 years ago, the amount of habitat, the amount of food for bees to eat was all over the place. And these days, with the way that land has changed, we have these small holdouts of places where there are flowers for bees to eat from. So it's hard to be a bee. It's hard to be a beekeeper. On average, we lose half of our hives these days. As a beekeeper, I had 16 colonies going into the winter. I checked in this weekend in the crazy warm weather, and I have 9 that are still alive. Maybe that's because I'm bad at it, because I've only been doing it for 10 years, but for folks who have been beekeepers for multiple generations, that loss number is about 50%. So I'm a little bit worse than average, maybe because I'm learning. And habitat is a major piece of this puzzle. These are a different kind of livestock, and beekeepers moving our hives as we do is something that is critical to our national food production. And if you look at the history of commercial beekeeping, we as an industry move our hives where there is good food for them. And a number of commercial beekeepers in Minnesota have moved their operations to the Dakotas. That food there is not what it used to be. We're running out of spaces to keep our bees. And these are agricultural producers. Their family operations. I'm a beekeeper because I love the work of keeping bees. I built this job. I built this weird job talking to you all sometimes, teaching about bees to keeping 9 hives. And I like being a beekeeper because I like working with my hands. I like making these tangible decisions with the information in front of me. I like outdoor work. I like producing food and feeding people, and I hear these sentiments echoed back to me from farmers and from all of us who have livelihoods that we built with our hands that support our families. And as a beekeeper, the success of my operation depends on relationships with farmers. My bees fly far, right? And I talk to the farmers that are next to where my hives are. Those farmers are in Wisconsin. Yeah, so maybe not relevant here. And with the pressures I hear from farmers that they face, it seems like the amount of habitat pollinators need may be hard to create on-farm, and that's not happening. We're seeing it happen. Pat mentioned that he plans habitat on his farm. We have more and more viable programs for that habitat increasing every day. And I want to thank all the farmers who are working to create that habitat. And roadsides historically have been this critical, unchanging food source for bees, and I commend Representative Swiginski for adding that amendment to the bill. I just wanted to mention that roadside flowers, they support these livelihoods and Minnesota beekeepers' ability to produce our fruits and nuts and vegetables.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Next up we have Margo Munson. Oh, I'm sorry. I have a question from Representative. Sure. Go ahead, Representative.
What do you think might happen if we lost half of our poultry or half of our dairy cows? What do you think we'd be doing in this committee right now?
That is Wazinski.
Kind of rhetorical.
Probably have a bill.
Thank you.
Follow-up?
I think my message was heard.
Ms. Wu.
There are a number of things that Department of Agriculture did a 3-year review that you all required of them on neonicotinoid pesticides, which are another piece of this pollinator decline. And there are 8 recommendations that they made. 2 of them require legislative action. So there's the creation of a funding account to help implement those different actions, and then the creation of a treated seed program in Minnesota, and both of those pieces are pieces that we hope to present to you soon. So, thank you.
Just a follow-up to Representative Mahoney's question or comment. You mentioned your hive loss so far has been about 50%. From what I've read, and I'm certainly no bee expert, but going back years and years and years, the typical loss, it has been 25-30%. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's closer to like 17-19%.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it is something that bees are insects. They die, right?
Yeah.
Colonies die. But this 50% loss is something that we feel when we're doing everything right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Munson. And again, I would remind testifiers our time is limited. I've been told by my CA that the room is reserved tonight for after the regent selection, so we certainly would like to finish today. Okay, go ahead, ma'am.
My name is Margaret Munson. I live in St. Paul. I come as an entomologist and a beekeeper, and to talk about a couple of things that haven't been mentioned so far. To the casual observer, most of these ditches and roadsides look like it's sort of unimportant, nondescript plants, maybe some shrubs, a few trees. But to thousands of different wildlife species, it's important habitat for food and shelter. And for our pollinators, be they honeybees or our native species, it offers life-sustaining forage. Due to the declining populations of pollinators, there's more need than ever to have more natural habitat and for as long as possible throughout the season. When you mow early, you cut off all those flowers that offer the pollen and nectar throughout the season, and our pollinators need it all season. If we are to be healthy, you and I need a balanced diet. Well, pollinators need a balanced diet, too. It isn't just pollen from one flower. It's pollen from a variety of different plants because they offer different nutrients and minerals, making those insects have a healthy immune system. If you don't need a healthy diet, you aren't going to be so healthy. So pollinators need diverse food supply. And not only are these host plants needed for their food, but many of our Minnesota species, especially of pollinators, we have over 400 species of native bees, not honeybees, native bees, that need to overwinter in Minnesota. So a lot of the forage that's left in the wild habitats, the stems and the stalks you see sticking up through the snow, are overwintering places because a lot of those stems are pithy or hollow. Everyone has heard about the colony losses that Aaron mentioned. We also have, for honeybees, we also have monarchs that are not, the population surviving is about 10% of what it was a few years ago. But roadsides are good habitats for milkweed. And milkweed is the only species, there's several milkweed species, but that's the only kind of plant that the monarch larvae can feed on. The monarchs are laying eggs in July all the way into September. So the monarch larvae have to have that milkweed throughout the season. And those that migrate, the adult monarchs that migrate at the end of the year, have to survive all that time to get down to Mexico, and then their progeny are the ones that come back. And when they come back, there has to be milkweed along the way. As serious as the health is of our honeybees for food supply, there's another thing that few people understand. We have many, many native pollinators that aren't bees and butterflies. There are many kinds of flies that pollinate, beetles that pollinate, moths. And those are the ones that are holding our wild places together. Our forests, our wetlands, our grasslands, our prairie remnants are all dependent on native species. And critical to roadside habitat is that if we could have more corridors, more connecting places where the wild vegetation can grow, it allows more diversity. If you have plants growing in little isolated spots, and those species aren't able to be pollinated, mixed with others of the same, you're getting a restricted gene pool. You're not getting diversity. You're not getting a healthy habitat. So if we can have roadsides where they're not needed for hay, where they're not needed for other products, it helps those native pollinators. And again, if there are corridors and the flowers can last throughout the season, it helps the integrity of that place. Roadside management does not have to be a one-size-fits-all policy. MnDOT has referred to principles of an integrated roadside management that include not to blanket mow, but to only mow what's needed for safety and invasive weeds. The MDA brochure on pollinator pest management practices for roadsides and other rights of way says to delay roadside mowing when possible. Even the DNR website for roadsides and wildlife refers to smart mowing or discourage 100% mowing. We've got to find ways to work together on this to incorporate as much healthy and diverse vegetation into our roadside management strategies to bring back a more robust roadside for insect pollinators, for birds, for small mammals, because we need them too. And to illustrate the pollinators that are not native, but are not honeybees, alfalfa is not primarily pollinated by honeybees. It's pollinated by a solitary bee called a leafcutter bee or a megacaulid. We don't see those usually. They're small, but they're critically important to our native species.
Thank you, ma'am, very much. And next up, any questions? Next up, we have Richard Fetterly and Jeanette Sanford, if they're in the audience. Richard Federley, Jeanette Sanford, and if they aren't here, we have Joe Dugan from Pheasants Forever. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, Joe Dugan, Pheasants Forever. Just a couple quick comments. I appreciate that you're allowing me to jump on here. It's a busy day. Just to put this a little bit in context, this legislation, the delayed roadside mowing bill, passed in 1985, and largely it was because of an effort from Pheasants Forever and others to delay the roadside mowing, to secure that window of nesting opportunity, and it's been on the books since then. We've had, there's ample research that talks about the values of roadsides for nesting habitat for pheasants and, for that matter, other wildlife. Iowa, Illinois, numerous states have delayed roadside mowing bills just for that reason. It's interesting, you know, at the time it passed, there was almost unanimous support of the legislation. A number of farmers, Charlie Berg being one, he was a state senator from Chicago, Morris area, Senator Dennis Fredrickson, now with the DNR, he was a farmer from the Redmond Falls area, so it was not as controversial then as it has apparently grown to be. But what has changed? Representative Swazinski made the comment, landscape has changed, and a lot of those little patches of grass and places that pheasants and other animals, and the past testifier just talked about that, a lot of them are gone. And the pollinator crisis that is upon us today, many view it as a crisis. It depends on your perspective, obviously, but that was not even thought of at that time. So those roadsides provide a very valuable place for wildlife and for other critters. And in the thought process at the time was, this is, in this case, it's public land. You can still harvest the grass after the August 1st timeline. So the forage value, there is some forage value that can be retained. So that we need to look at this with perspective on all things. I understand the values of forage today, because there's very little forage that's grown commercially anymore. I mean, it's we have a pretty much a corn and soybean rotation in Minnesota. The pastures that used to be around are gone. The idle acres are gone. So it really is a changed landscape. And Representative Swazinski is I got that right.
Close enough.
It has changed. And so, I'm not sure, I think you might have stepped up, but you talked about a box of rocks or a can of worms, and this perhaps is, and there may be a little chaos and confusion. So what I would strongly look at is before we gut what has been on the books for 40 years, not to say it has, things that once done shouldn't be reviewed, I think a careful review of what's going on and look at this process so that these values that people thought of were important many years ago, and they are perhaps from the standpoint of wildlife, and now, I mean, I never heard of the bee crisis or pollinator crisis until this last couple of years. There's some valuable production of wildlife, and in the case of pollinators, that connects to the alfalfa and many other things. So, the world's getting, smaller in a lot of ways. We need to take a careful look at this, and I understand the perspective to try to get the support value. There's less grass out there, so how can we solve some of those problems? But at the same time, there are critical values for wildlife and a number of other things that these roadsides have, and I would not go down a road where it's a development road, it's not really a fun road, I guess it is, and destroy what's been in place for all these years. Let's retain what we can and have a balanced perspective on this. I think careful study of this bill and its impacts need to be looked at further.
Thanks, Mr. Dugan. We haven't done the minutes yet. We have a quorum now. So Representative Kunish Kudin has checked the minutes of February 21st. All in favor of approval, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Approval, same sign. Minutes approved. Thank you. Representative Johnson, you have an amendment. Would you care to move your amendment at this
point? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the DE3. And I'd like to start by apologizing to Representative Zizki. I wish I would have talked with you about this, but the pace of the legislature continues to baffle me. And but anyway, hopefully this explanation, you'll see some value in it. This amendment was partly written to stop the chaos and the confusion and also to balance competing interests. In my district, I hear these competing interests. There's a lot of farmers in my district, some mow the ditches. There's beekeepers in my district. There's also just citizens who care about having ditches and adhering to the current law. And so the idea here is to just stop the chaos right now and put a stop to the permits for this year. And then next year, ask the Department of Transportation to come to us with the recommendation of how to do this better. Frankly, I don't think they did this well, and that's what we're hearing. But maybe they can figure out how to do it well. And I work on several principles towards what I hope would be involved with that. First of all, ease of application. And this actually comes from a farmer who farms along Highway 22 in my district. And he said, make it like a burn permit. And so I looked up on a burn permit. I have some property up in northern Minnesota. If I burn in the summer, I got to get a burn permit. That's an ease of application. And I think we can find a way to make that permit really easy. Burn permits are applied for all the time up north. That's a good model for that, it seems to me. I also think that we need to acknowledge that the state owns the rights of way of property. We heard that from MnDOT. They're concerned about lawsuits. I know townships are concerned about this. But this bill deals with the state-owned property along the state roads. I've heard from the townships about they're concerned about their right of way. We had some legislation last year where that was expressed. This is the public's land, and we need to acknowledge that. I think it's important. But also it makes sense to give priority to the owner or the occupant of the private land adjacent to the right-of-way. That is the custom and use, and it makes good sense, and that could be built into the permit. Number four talks about keeping those dates available. We just heard good testimony with related to pollinators and to pheasants. Those dates are there for a reason. I think it's quite notable that those dates have been in law since 1985. And farm country legislators were leaders on that. I think that's notable. But also, I'm aware of the challenge with eradicating noxious weeds. I think there are times I'm concerned about noxious weeds in Minnesota, and I'm thinking Palmer amaranth, but it doesn't limit it to that. And there may be a reason to mow ditches earlier than August 1st to deal with the noxious weeds where spraying is ineffective or inappropriate, and I think that needs to be built into it. So this is something I've been thinking about a long time, and here's my chance to put it into this amendment. And then finally, this is maybe my personal approach to it, but I have often seen Minnesota as divided by Highway 10. I drive Highway 10 a lot. North of Highway 10, it's different than it is south of Highway 10. I mean, look at Representative Postman. He lives in that neck of the woods. It just is my... And so my point in number five is to ask MnDOT to recognize that the habitat needs in southern Minnesota and the relatively lack of public land in southern Minnesota is really different than it is north of Highway 10. And so that was my attempt to kind of demarcate the differences. Mr. Chair, you mentioned about all the acreage in public land. Almost all of that's north of Highway 10. And there's some public land south of Highway 10, but down in my county, there's not a lot of open stretches. The one testifier who talked about the little small patches of grassland, those have disappeared. And those have disappeared by the way we farm. And I'm fine with that, but we need to adjust, and the right-of-way is a place to really take advantage of that. And I've been one member who has encouraged my highway district to be aggressive in creating pollinator habitat along the ditches, along the state highways. And it's not easily done, and maybe we need to get better at that, but there's an opportunity there. And so that's the purpose of the amendment, and I move the amendment.
Thanks, Representative Johnson. Discussion to the amendment. Now, I wish, too, it could have come up a little bit sooner and had more communication with the bill author. I think it's a little bit difficult at this time now. comment on the amendment, Representative Swazinski, with the bill offer?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, appreciate your really thoughtful consideration. I think you've got some decent pieces in this amendment. I wish we could have had a conversation before this. And not to say as we move this bill forward to the floor, I think we should encourage potentially some of the aspects of this bill into what the final product will be as we discuss it on the House floor. But at this time, I would, you know, just not having really having a long time to be able to look at it, I would think maybe we could just, if we could push a pause, if you'd want to pull it, or just vote no, either way. But I would be very open. My door would be exceptionally wide open to some of these aspects of this amendment.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it's not unheard of for just having a bill sit in the committee for a few days. And I appreciate that there's a time issue here and that we're concerned about making sure our bills go through. But I've served on committees where that's happened before, and I've actually been a committee chair where I did that to a fellow DFL member's bill. And I know that they didn't necessarily appreciate that, but it made for a stronger and better bill. And that way you actually have the committee do the work, and the bill is ready for the floor when the time comes. So, you know, I'm sorry too that the communication didn't happen, because I think they're very well aligned with each other. They both have an interest in solving this problem, and that's very much appreciated by the rest of us. So I just a suggestion, and I you know, it's up to you, Mr. Chair, but I just wanted to offer that as an alternative.
Thank you, Representative. And I that's a good idea, except that we are running up against deadlines. We had a bill yesterday that was put on the table. We have to come back with that one. I had a bill that we put on the table that have to come back. We're running into some time constraints. We have a lot of bills yet to go. Our committee has been extremely busy this year, so I'm not going to do that today. I would remand the two representatives to get together, and if you can find some common ground, have an amendment on the House floor, and we can certainly, with your support, Representative, if you are in favor of it, I think it would pass at that point. So that would be my say. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to withdraw the amendment at this point with the understanding. I'll work with it. I'd like to tell a little story here. Representative Swazinski was a former student at Minnesota State University, so I look forward to working with you again. Thank you. Yes.
Thanks, Representative Johnson. And again, please open that door, get together, and work on any common things you can have. Any final comments, Representative?
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and Mr. Johnson was a decent teacher.
Representative Miller, would you like to renew your motion?
I would. I'd like to renew the motion that House File 124 be re-referred to, pardon me?
As amended.
As amended to the General Register.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, same sign. Motion is passed. Bill is on its way, Representative Swazinski. We have a quick timeout here. Representative Miller has an announcement to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the sake of time, I will be very brief, but today is Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative Day on the Hill. They've actually been in 400 North. I invite you all to go up there, but I think they're there for another 5 minutes, and then they're going to have lunch and head over to the Senate. But sugar beets are very important in my district and my region. I'm proud to have them in my actual county of Renville. I've personally driven a sugar beet truck for 14 years, and so as a token of appreciation from Southern Men Beet Sugar Cooperative, they have provided for representatives today of this committee, Mr. Beatty, a little sugar beet. It's not food today, sorry folks, but I'm going to just pass this around, and if you'd like one, take one, pass it around. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks, Representative Miller. Next bill up on the agenda is House File 608. Representative Pearson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Chair Anderson, I would like to move that House File 608 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Representative, please present your bill.
My bill, again, we're dealing with policy issues here, and just on an overview from the policy standpoint, this bill is really trying to accomplish something that we all have conversations on every day, which is to try to create new small farmers, more farmers in the state of Minnesota. We had an ag instructor in here, I believe it was last week, basically giving testimony that he feels his most important crop are those agriculture education students that graduate through the high schools and move on into different careers. Well, one of the things that's the most difficult to move into is actual farming itself. And so from a public policy standpoint, this bill is trying to address that. We're really trying to be able to pass the torch. And actually, I'd like to take up the A1 amendment first, if I may. Representative Bly came to me, and we've had some discussions on this. I'm hoping to actually have the A1 added as a friendly concept and idea. Really, the original bill ends up narrowing some of the language so that maybe some of our absentee landowners are not able to pass the torch into the next generation of farmers and agriculturalists, and I really think that limiting that is against the public policy goal of this specific bill. So I'm looking at the A1 as the friendly amendment to this bill at this time.
Well, Representative Bly moves his A1 amendment. Discussion, Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. And I'll be very brief in the interest of time. I did have a good opportunity to speak with Representative Pearson on this bill and feel good about it. I've carried this bill before. I'm really glad that he's bringing it forward, and I strongly support what we're doing. In our conversation, we did talk about this amendment as a way of kind of bringing down the cost and talking about a way of making it work better. So I strongly support it, and thankful that he's willing to accept it.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment is approved. More amendments, Representative Bly?
I guess I'll kind of defer to the author on A2. We had talked briefly about it, and this is a somewhat variation on A1, and we talked about introducing it just for discussion, just to see if it was added something that the A1 did not.
I'd encourage a discussion offline because we do not have enough time to discuss a lot of amendments.
Very good.
Yeah, I think the A1 is really the better form of the two amendments because it really narrows things so that implement dealers and whatnot wouldn't reap a benefit that's not necessarily what our policy goal is in this situation. Okay. And then I like the A3 and the A4. I think at this point I'd like to leave the bill intact as it is and we'll work. This has to go through the tax committee, so I think both those things would have implications in the tax committee, and we can work with that as it goes through that committee work. Really more dedicated towards the dollar side of things, the budget side of things with how this bill would operate than necessarily the policy that we're trying to discuss here.
So with that assurance, Representative Bly, would you hold off on your other amendments, or do you want to offer them now?
No, I will hold off on them. One has to do with setting a sunset, and because I think it may be wise to review it and come back. And with your understanding that you will work with me, I did. And in the crunch of time, I recently looked more at the Nebraska bill, which has some interesting things in it too. And looking at also cost containment, something for us to talk about is both Iowa and Nebraska just allow for rental tax credits, and that might be something to talk about as well. So with that, I will take the discussion offline. I can't offer these amendments in taxes because I'm not there, so I'll have to trust that you'll look at that.
I would accept feedback from any of the committee members, and that's actually why I encourage Representative Bly to bring these amendments because I think they're good discussion points. There's removing the blood relative as the A4 as well, and again, the impact of that would have I think huge impacts on our fiscal notes and our revenue notes, excuse me, on this specific bill. But I think this is important to get a program started. And I think the bill that as amended with the A1 is the best way to get a good program started. And like Representative Bly is saying, we can revisit that and make some changes down the road as well.
Very good. Thank you much, and I appreciate the cooperation from my colleagues. Representative Bly.
If I could just make one more comment, and one of the things we explored was that blood relative sometimes includes a relationship that isn't going to necessarily pass on inheritance or whatever, which is some of the concern perhaps before. So it is something to look at and not try to exclude people who could benefit from this kind of incentive. So I just mentioned that as a for the members.
Thank you very much. Any testifiers, Representative Pearson?
Yeah, we've got a list of testifiers before you, and you can start from the top of the list.
Okay, Eric Sennerud, then Andrew Varsnes, Matthew Fitzgerald, and Nolan Lenzen. And again, I would encourage testifiers, you have a great story, but to please keep your testimony succinct. Good morning, welcome, and identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representative of the Ag Policy Committee. Eric's going to step aside for time's sake, so we'll try and be brief and respectful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify about Bill 608, a tax credit for young and beginning farmers. My name is Matthew Fitzgerald. I farm with my family in McLeod County, and I'm one of the founding members of the Central Minnesota Young Farmers Coalition. I hope to speak to you today about our coalition of young farmers, why we support this bill, and share a little bit about my personal experience as a beginning farmer. After my brief comments, I'll invite Andrew to share his own experience and how this bill can positively impact his farm. The Central Minnesota Young Farmers Coalition formed in 2016 as a membership organization solely of young and beginning farmers. Our members' homes range from Hoffman to St. Cloud to Litchfield and Hutchinson, all the way down to Faribault. We have a sister chapter up in Duluth, Minnesota, and have worked with a larger coalition of other agricultural organizations. We're a group that includes members of the Farm Union and also the Farm Bureau. Because of this narrow focus, we are a pragmatic and energetic group that is excited to support this bill. The future of farming is uncertain in Minnesota. It is well known fact the average age of the farmer is in their late 50s. In order to continue the strong tradition of farming in Minnesota, we need a new generation. One of the primary barriers for young and beginning farmers who heed this call is access to land. Our desire to farm is directly at odds with a high cost of entry. House Bill 608 is a practical and big tent solution that creates a win-win for the future farming in three major ways. First, by using a tax credit, this bill creates a tangible benefit not only for young farmers, but also the owners of agricultural assets willing to share the opportunity of farming through sale or rental. Secondly, this bill is broad enough to support all Minnesota farmers, urban or rural, crop or cattle, conventional or alternative, large or small. As less than 1% of the population are farmers, we should not divide ourselves, but instead work for solutions that benefit everyone. Finally, the tax credit gives a financial management training to young farmers, which means that the energy and passion that we bring will be balanced with applicable management tools to become strong business owners. I grew up on a farm in McLeod County where my family raises 1,200 acres of organic corn and soybeans. After graduating from college, I had the opportunity to work for two great Minnesota companies, Thrivent Financial and Cargill Incorporated. Despite these engaging jobs, I found myself pulled back to farming. I desire the opportunity to start my own business. I want to live in a community where I can have an impact and know my neighbors by first name. And finally, I'm compelled by the necessary work of raising sustainable and quality food for citizens of Minnesota. House Bill 608 will help me get a foot in the door of McLeod County. The average rent in McLeod County is $233. And the 90th percentile, some of the best ground goes for rent well over $300 an acre. By providing an incentive to landowners, I will be able to start conversations and develop long-term relationships with landowners to begin to build my own operation. This bill is not a silver bullet, but we as farmers know how to make a little go a long way. Mr. Chair, representatives and members of this committee, thank you for your attention. We are proud to support this bill and appreciate the work that Representative Pearson and others have done to support it. I'm now going to turn over to other fellow young farmer, Andrew Barnes.
Go ahead, sir. Identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman and representatives, my name is Andrew Barsnes, and I grow wheat, soybeans, and some hops in Grant County on 160 acres that I'm renting. And in order to succeed, I'll have to expand, and I didn't grow up on a farm or in a farm community, and so I don't have the same relationships or connections that someone who did might have, and so that results in less opportunity, and I think this bill would make people like me more competitive, and so that when an opportunity does come up, I'm in a better position to take advantage of it. And for example, if a neighbor's farm comes up for sale or for rent, I can offer an additional percentage to the owner in the form of a tax credit, and so I have less chance of being outbid by maybe a bigger, more established farmer. And I think that this bill is a practical and important step towards reducing the barriers that a lot of young and beginning farmers face to get into farming in a time when new farmers are needed to energize and contribute to the rural communities. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. At some other point, we'd like to hear about your adventure into growing hops. It sounds interesting. Thank you, both of you. Matthew or Nolan, one more you have to testify? Very good, welcome. And we need more young folks in agriculture, so I certainly applaud your efforts and good luck with your enterprises. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you, committee chairman and committee members.
Our time is short, remember.
I am. My name is Nolan Lenzen. I have a small 30-cow organic dairy operation up by Eagle Bend, Minnesota. I'm fifth generation, and one would assume that being fifth generation dairy farm, I would have a fairly easy start in farming. Unfortunately, my father discouraged it at every step, and much to his surprise, I decided that I wanted a dairy farm. Starting on my own wasn't as easy as one would think. I had to rent to the neighbor's farm at 20 years old and make a go of it myself. And then 2006, I decided I got to the point where I could actually purchase a farm, and about 6 to 8 months of going through the process of purchasing a farm, that deal fell through. I've used many beginning farm programs throughout my farming career, and the one that in particular was the farm ownership loan through FSA. And what happened was the loan was approved, but it was pending funding. And so I had to renew my purchase agreement 3 times. And eventually, after the third time ran out, they didn't want to renew anymore. And so for me, a bill like this would be important because it would provide an incentive to, in my case, a landowner, to stick with me. And so when I purchased the farm I'm at now, luckily enough, I had a seller that wanted to sell to a young farmer, and so he offered a lengthy purchase agreement, and everything seemed to work out just fine. But I'm here with LSP as a LSP member, and quite involved with LSP. So LSP offered this bill 11 years ago, and it really hasn't gotten very far. I was part of a steering committee for Farm Beginnings about a month and a half ago, and so they asked for ideas on how we can assist beginning farmers, and I said, well, I feel like we could offer some tax incentives. I didn't know how or in what capacity, but there should be some tax incentives to help the next generation along. And so after the meeting, Bobby King came up and said, well, actually, we have this bill that we authored a while back, and we could see if there's any interest on the with legislators. And about a month later, I get a call saying that the bill was picked up by Representative Pearson. And I thought that that was, you know, our doing. And turns out he picked it up on his own volition. So we met with him and had a great meeting. And I walked away with that pretty excited, knowing that there was some genuine interest in beginning farmers. Everybody wants to help them out, but nobody seems to know how to go about doing it. And in my personal experience is I would not be farming, period, if it wasn't for the help of beginning farmer programs provided by, generally by federal government. I've used farm, so when I purchased my cattle to start my farm, that was through FSA. I've used operating loans through FSA. I've used the NRCS EQIP program to help. Basically, I bought a rundown, dilapidated farm. I grew up just west of the Twin Cities, a small town called Waconia.
Mr. Newman, can you wrap up? You have two bills left.
Yep.
Could you have a great story, just a great story to wrap it up.
And so, forgot my train of thought here.
Sorry.
So I have a lot of experience with beginning farmer programs. And so I'd like to ask that that you give this some serious consideration. I'd love to have some help provided on a state level. I think it's sorely needed, and I'd like to thank you for your time. And, you know, so I thought it was hard getting started when I did 15 years ago. I couldn't imagine getting started now. The climate has changed such that I feel it's getting close to being impossible.
I would agree.
And so thank you, and if you guys have any questions, I'd love to answer them.
Any questions? If not, final comments, Representative Pearson.
Yeah, I can't say it any better. Again, yeah. You know, we've got some great federal programs. This is a small, almost token-esque type of ask through the tax bill, and doesn't actually come out of the agriculture budget, so that's why it's heading to tax. And so this is something I think can have a real positive impact. Again, every meeting that we have policy discussions about how to grow this crop of young farmers, and I feel like we've grown a great agricultural education program in the state of Minnesota, but boy, if you can't actually bring yourself into that industry in the actual farming capacity, we've spent a lot of money for naught. So this is a great program to help make those new farmers attain their dream to become farmers and agriculturalists.
Very well said. By the way, in your packets, members, is a letter of support from the Minnesota Farmers Union. So they are also in support of House File 608. With that, Representative Pearson renews his motion that his House File 608, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Congratulations, Representative. Next bill up is House File 636. Representative Poston, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the bill, but before I do, I'd like to apologize to you and to the committee. I learned earlier today that when you're a freshman and you present your first bill to committee, you're supposed to bring treats, and I didn't do that. So I promise you the next time I'm up here, I'll bring some really, really good treats.
How about next week?
Next week. I'll bring them next week.
Okay, very good. Go ahead.
So I move House File 636 be re-referred to Property Tax and Local Government Finance Division.
Very good, Representative. You have a couple of testifiers, and would you like to call them up now, or do you have more comments to make on your bill?
Yeah, my comments are House File 636 is another bill that I believe helps new farmers, and it helps retiring farmers. Our farmers right now are at an average age of 58 years old, and many of them are coming up on retirement. However, as we all know, farmers typically work past the normal retirement age. More and more kids are leaving the farm, and it's really hard for a beginning farmer to find farm opportunities like we just heard from Nolan. Currently, the homestead classification is extended to immediate family, spouse, child, grandchild, or sibling. This bill would extend that tax classification to beginning farmers. And there's a couple of explanations of beginning farmers, but if you look on page 3, section 3.1, it will give you the definition of what a beginning farmer is. So with that, I'll let Tom and Cole talk to the bill.
Very good. Good morning. Tell us who you are again, and let's hear your testimony.
Good morning. For the record, Cole Ruprecht with Minnesota Farm Bureau. And we've heard the discussion from the previous bill and what Representative Poston had said. Minnesota Farm Bureau does support House File 636, and that's the fact that we know that the current farm economy is tough out there and that it is difficult for beginning farmers to get involved within the industry. And so we look forward to further discussing this as it moves on to the Ag Property, or to the Property Tax Committee.
Thank you much. Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and very similar to the last bill, that Farmers Union supports this legislation. We feel it's another possibility as we continue to look at what the options are for beginning farmers. As a previous testifier in the previous bill said, the climate has kind of changed, and so we're always looking for opportunities with prices of land. And that does, you know, I just talked to a member here who was interested, and I have a letter from him that I'll share with the committee later, but, you know, taxes can go up several thousand dollars. You know, that can be to a younger farmer and kind of does help give them a little bit of a start. Thank you for your consideration.
Very good. Thank you much to our testifiers. Anybody else wish to testify either for or against House File 636? If not, any final comments, Representative Poston?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say that this bill is good for retiring farmers, and it's good for beginning farmers. And I would appreciate your support.
With that, Representative Poston renews his motion that his House File 636 be re-referred to the Committee on the Property Taxes and Local Government. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passed. And your bill is on the way. Thanks, Representative Poston. One more bill on the agenda.
Representative Anderson moves that the House File 485 be referred to the Committee of Education Innovation Policy. Representative Anderson, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will be quick. Good bill. We hear that ag teachers do a lot of extra work in the summertime, and for a good many of those, they don't get paid for it. FFA instructors have summer projects and such, and we had this up last year. And got good buy-in from schools and educators, and it's a kind of a 50-50 thing. So it's a good bill, and I had a whole bunch of testify, but we're just going to have one. So, okay, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Mr. Apple?
That is correct.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
State your name for the record and who you're with, and go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I get a reassuring smile over there from Representative Pearson. Tom Apple, I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators. I represent today the high school level of about 254 high school instructors across the state. We have another trend in agriculture education that's been occurring over the last few years, and that's been the decline of opportunities for students to participate in agricultural education summer programs. You have a bill before you that is a grant program that we did last year. We're hoping that we can renew that for the coming year. Without spending a lot of time talking about how good our instruction is during the 9-month school year, one of the pieces that we continue to miss is that extended contract in the summertime. Due to the seasonal nature of agriculture, there's a whole lot of things that happen during the summer. There's a lot of leadership development. There's an awful lot of our county fairs or state fairs. It seems kind of strange that we teach our students 9 months in a year, and then when agriculture really starts to happen in our fields and our farms and our fairs, that we don't have an opportunity to go ahead and have some time for that. So we ask you if you kind of support this. We think it's a need. We've done some research on it. We've worked on this for a couple years. The best analogy or the best summary I can come up with is I start to look at our county fairs, when I start to look at our state fairs, and I walk those, and I say, gee, we've got a tractor driving contest, and we deal with farm safety. We go to livestock barns. We've got a lot of students involved in projects over the summer with their livestock. That's the opportunity to shine during the summer and exhibit that. We've got a crop production going on in the summer. We've got a crop shows. We also have a lot of horticulture landscaping booths. Hopefully you've seen some of those at the Minnesota State Fair, et cetera. So we're looking for continued support of this particular grant program. In summary, I retired out of the high school classroom, agriculture classroom, after 37 years, and I start to look back at the students I've had and where they're at. We need in our small communities, our agriculture programs, we need an opportunity for students to participate during the summertime.
Thank you, Mr. Apple. Any questions for Mr. Apple from members? Okay, seeing none. Representative Pearson.
To the testifier, you know, if you had done better in teaching me as an ag instructor, I wouldn't have ended up here. So, you know, just to, goes to credibility of the testifier. But thank you, Mr. Apple, for being such a wonderful agricultural education teacher, and all the work that you, the time that you spent in the summers of chaperoning us and keeping an eye on us in the, at the state fair. And can't thank you enough. Sorry about the sarcasm. I really do appreciate and respect everything that you've done. And I, in many ways, credit, you know, any leadership that I have in my life, a lot of it comes from your teachings and what I learned. And I sometimes scare the FFAers around here doing the green hand pledge and start reciting that as I'm walking behind them out on the campus. So it's good to see you, though.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Go ahead, Mr.
Chair. Representative Peterson and Representative Anderson, to answer Representative Anderson's question. Yes, Nels Pearson III was a past FFA president and a member of mine. Early on in his career in high school, we always talk about setting goals. That's one of the things we do with an agricultural education FFA. One of his early goals in life, he had talked about legislative, so we've waited a few decades, but it appears he has gotten there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to testify for or against House File 485? Seeing none, Representative Anderson renews his motion that House File 485 be referred to the Committee on Election Innovation Policy. Do you have any final comments? I'm sorry.
Well, I did, but...
Go ahead. I'm trying to land this thing. Go ahead, Representative.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. That was my mistake. Chair, final comments?
No, I guess the votes are there. I just want to say that this is a good program. It's a one-to-one match, so the school has to provide half the funding, and the state grants would provide the other half. So I would thank you for your support. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so thank you for that. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. He said thank you for the vote. I changed that to aye, sir. Okay.
The motion prevails. Hey, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.